Good morning. This is Doug Fain for All Things Jessamine here on Jess FM 105.9. On today's program, we're going to be talking to a lifelong resident of Jessamine County. His name is Creed Johns. He's almost 93 years old. He was a postal carrier for many years, but before that, he was in the military. He served in Germany as a 19-year-old kid and was there during the height of and the end of the war. Some very interesting stories he has to tell. Interesting information coming your way next from Creed Johns on All Things Jessamine and brought to you by the Farmers Bank of Jessamine County.
In 1934, a brand new house cost about $6,000. The cost of a gallon of gas was 10 cents. And in 1934, Farmers Bank of Jessamine County opened their doors at 200 North Main Street in Nicholasville, and they've been there ever since. The times may have changed, but Farmers Bank is still here, still proud to be the only locally owned and locally operated bank in Jessamine County. Banking with friends and neighbors. Farmers Bank, equal housing lender, member FDIC.
Hi, this is Doug Fain. Before our interview starts with Mr. Johns, I want to tell you about something that happened. We pre-recorded this interview with Creed back a couple of weeks ago, and in it, we ask him about his family. He tells us that out of all of the brothers and sisters, that he and his youngest brother, Tom Welch Johns, are the only ones still living. Well, sadly, the night of the day we interviewed him, his youngest brother, Tom, passed away. We extend our sincere condolences to the Johns family and to Creed. And now we present to you the interview that took place that day with a World War II veteran and his story, Creed Johns. Good morning and welcome to All Things Jessamine. Glad to have you on this Saturday morning as we continue to learn more about the county we live in and learn about people, places, and things. With us today, we have a gentleman who has been in this county for quite a few years and has had quite a life. He has served in the military. He has served in the Postal Service. He has farmed. He's been a fixture in this town, the Union Mill area of this county for a long time. His name is Creed Johns, and he is with us today. We are so glad that he was able to join us. Good morning.
Good morning.
Glad you were able to come in and be with us today, and you have an interesting story. There are some people who follow our program who also follow the You Grew Up in Jessamine County Facebook page and have seen the picture, the one that is in the National Archives, is that where it's at, of you coming up the hill as a soldier, snow, it's snow on the ground, and you and another gentleman, and we'll get into that in a moment and talk about that, but that was during World War II,
right. As
you all were captured in a photograph with an AP photographer, I think it was.
Yeah.
So we'll get into that here in a moment, but I want to start, if you will, tell us about how Creed Johns came to this earth. Tell us about your mom and dad, when you were born and where and who your brothers and sisters were.
Well, I was born on Jessamine Creek, January the 25th, 1924.
Now, for anybody that does some quick figuring, it sounds to me like you're getting close to, what, 93?
Yeah.
You're 93?
Next birthday I'll be 93.
93. Who was your mom and dad?
My daddy was Robert Lee Johns, and my mother was Ines Brumfield.
Yeah.
Before she married daddy.
Now, they were Jessamine County folk.
Yes.
Was she akin to all the Brumfields that's around here?
Pretty much.
Yeah. So the Johns, which was a pretty good-sized family, and the Brumfields, kind of like the Hagers, kind of like Crabgrass. They were everywhere, weren't they?
Yeah.
You had a big family.
You did.
Now, you were born in 24. Do you have brothers and sisters?
Yes.
And who are they?
There was eight of us.
Okay.
There's two of us left.
All right.
Me and my youngest brother, Tom Welch. All the others are gone. There was three girls and five boys.
Okay.
In my family.
And they, you were next to youngest?
No, I was two from the bottom.
Two from the bottom. So you raised up in a pretty good-sized family. Of course, back then, Creed, what was the age difference between you and the oldest? Do you remember?
12 years.
So pretty much some of the older ones were able to take care of themselves.
Yeah.
And you know, we've often talked to people that had, back in those days, they'd have a lot of kids, but you got to think about it. The older ones, by the time the younger ones were born, the older ones sometimes were even out of the house.
True.
So it wasn't like you were raising them all at one time.
Yeah. Down on the creek, my mother had never weaned my sister, who was just 18 months old, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So a lady across the creek had just weaned a baby.
Mm-hmm.
Her name was Elizabeth Taylor. So they put me on Elizabeth Taylor for 2 weeks till my mother could get my sister weaned.
Really?
And my oldest brother, who was named Albert, he would saddle the mare,
yeah,
across the creek, get Miss Taylor and bring her over, and I would nurse her, and then he'd go back and he'd go get her twice a day.
People that are listening to us that are 60 years old and younger are probably listening, thinking, what in the world is he talking about? I mean, that's just days gone by that are not duplicated. It's amazing how it's changed.
That's how I started.
You were born on Jessamine Creek, probably had a normal childhood, boy growing up, into everything. Where'd you go to school?
Bethel.
Bethel School.
Well, I started at Hanley.
Yeah, that's one room.
That's another story. We moved to the Shun Road in 1929.
Mm-hmm.
90 acres. Was Paul Bowen's father owned that farm.
Mm-hmm.
The farm I was raised on was Dr. Snyder.
Okay.
My grandmother, we always lived close to her, Agnes Johns.
Mm-hmm.
Always stayed close to her. Daddy did, if he could get a place. We had started to Hanley. This is a story in itself. And we were driving a pony and a buggy. And we moved to the Shun Road from 27. I can't think of the name of that. And one day, we were coming home in that buggy, and one of the shafts come loose. And my brother that was killed in World War II was driving the pony, and he couldn't hold her. I was sitting in my oldest sister's lap, and she jumped out with me and fractured three of my ribs.
Yeah,
I didn't get to go back to school any that year. Next year, we started going to Bethel.
Now, did you go all through 12 grades?
No, I did 2 years of high school.
Okay. Was it at that point in time that you were in the service, or was that later?
That was before.
Okay. So when would you have gone into the service then?
43.
Now, was that something you did on your own, or did Uncle say you're going?
I was drafted.
You were drafted.
Yeah.
And you were 43, you were what, 20?
I was 19.
19 years old.
Yeah.
So you probably worked on the farm until
I
that
did,
point,
yeah.
And Uncle Sam said, we need you, and you went and you told me, where'd you start out?
Fort Thomas.
Okay. At that point in time, at 19 years old, had you met your future wife?
Yes.
Okay, so you, but were you all dating at that time? As far as dating?
Sort of.
Kinda. Okay. So you went to the war. Now you're shipped off and you went, where'd you say?
Fort Thomas, Kentucky. That was just they get you in. We got our uniforms and then they took us to Camp Wheeler, Georgia.
Yeah.
It's right out of Macon. And that's where I did my basic training.
Did you know at that time that you were going to end up in Germany?
Did not.
You had no idea.
No.
Did you go anywhere before Germany?
Yeah, we went to Virginia. That's
okay.
Where we shipped out.
But as far as overseas?
No.
So when you got to Virginia, did you find out then that's where we're going?
Yeah, we knew we was going to.
And in 43, things were pretty much on its way.
Yeah.
So you knew that when you were shipped out, this is going to be hard.
We left out of Virginia and landed at Casablanca, North Africa.
Yeah.
And the Americans and the other Allied troops had run the Germans out of North Africa. There wasn't any fighting there.
Yeah.
But they took us to a camp that was named for the first American killed in North Africa. His name was John B. Passage,
mm-hmm.
And the camp was called John B. Passage Farm. They moved us across North Africa in 40 and 8. That's 40 men or 8 horses, boxcar, World War I.
Yeah.
So they put 30 of us in 100 gallons of water and enough rations for a week, and we rode that train for a week and wound up in Oran. And one of the high points of that place, the ex-king of England and the American divorcee had married at the best beach in the world, they said. But we stayed there a week, and then we got back on a boat and went into Naples, Italy.
Mm-hmm.
And from Naples, we stayed at Mussolini's racetrack. It was kind of like Keeneland up here.
Yeah.
And we got the first bombing right there. They were Stuka dive bombers. If you know what that is, they start diving, and at the end of the dive, they turn the bomb loose. That was the first bombing I was in. and one hit close to me and my partner's tent and buried up in the ground. It didn't go off. That is what the slave laborers of Germany did. They did a lot of that.
And when this happened, you were 19.
Yeah.
Do you still, I'm sure you do, the fear that had to be in your mind?
Oh, man.
I mean, you come from a little place called Jessamine County, yeah, Kentucky, and now all of a sudden you're in Italy.
Yeah.
With bombs falling beside you. How in the world, how scary. Now, let me ask you before you answer that.
Scared to death.
Did you have brothers already there or in the war?
I had a brother.
Okay. Had you communicated with him to know what to expect?
But I got overseas before he did.
Oh, okay. So you were the pioneer in the family.
He was in Louisiana, and he got a leave to come home, and he was hitchhiking back and in a coal truck. It wrecked, mm-hmm, and almost broke his back. So they thought he was gone. They didn't nobody know where he was.
Yeah.
But when he got out of that hospital, his unit had already gone to the Pacific, so they sent him to the Atlantic, and he'd only been up there 30 days when he got killed.
Yeah, and that's why, is that right, a month in the Atlantic?
He went into the 2nd Armored Division. I think he was on a half track that took a direct hit.
How long after you got over there did you know that he had died?
I didn't get the news several months before I knew. The night that we was on a hill in Germany when I got the word on a 50 caliber machine gun, and I had to stand 2 hours on that gun that night, the day I got the news, mm-hmm, he had been killed.
So at 19 years old, you got bombs falling around you, and you find out that your big brother was gone. I can't even imagine scared you would have been.
You just had to put up with it.
Now, I understand also that you had a problem with, was it tonsils when you got over there?
We were on Anzio Beach when I had that trouble.
Yeah.
You've heard of Anzio Beach.
Yeah, yeah.
That was as close to hell as you can ever come.
Really?
Anzio Beach. But the first sergeant would come by every day. We were dug in foxholes. And he looked at me and he said, "Johns, what's the matter with your neck? My tonsils were swollen way out."
Mm-hmm.
He said, "You get your butt over to that aid station." So I went over there and they took me to the hospital. I can't remember the woman's name now. She took me in. She said, I was hoping to get to go back to Naples, mm-hmm, to the big hospital.
Mm-hmm.
But that nurse said, her name was Mary Wilson. If you ever read Tom Brokaw's book, she's got a page in there.
Oh, yeah?
But she said, "I believe we can treat you right here." So she gave me a shot in the back end, and I stayed there 5 days.
Mm.
And she said, "I'm going to send you back to your unit." I said, "I don't know where they are." She said, "You'll find them."
Oh, my gosh. And you did.
So I got out and started hitchhiking. The first ride I got was with a British soldier, and he took me about 2 or 3 miles. Then I walked until almost dark, and I come up on a MP unit that was serving chow, and I fell in the back line and got my chow, and they knew where my unit was. Wasn't too far away from that.
Man.
So I got back to my unit about dark that night.
On your own?
Yeah, Anzio Beach.
Wow. So you got back into the service. Now, how long were you in over there? You went in 43, you said. How long were you there?
I got back to Nicholasville in 45.
So 2 years.
Yeah.
You went through all that, through the major thing. How close did you get? You evidently were really close, because folks, and I wish we were televised, he brought in today some remnants that he brought back from the war, including a full-size swastika flag that you acquired in a
Nuremberg.
In Nuremberg. Is that the closest you got to Hitler?
No, not really. We was in Italy, getting close to the mountains. We hadn't got in the mountains yet. And I was leading the column, and he hollered at me, "Johns, hold it right there." He said, "You see right over there, here come 15 German soldiers."
Mm-hmm.
And I was walking right at them, and I had never seen them. So he dropped down on the ground, took his field glasses out of his, they called them a Musail bag for an officer. And he left that bag. And we moved back, I'd say maybe 50 yards. He said, "Oh, John, I left my pack. Would you go out there and get it?"
Yeah. So that was a perk of being an officer.
I crawled out there and got back. And there was a rock wall there close. He lined us up behind that wall, and we started pouring lead at those Germans. And I think we killed one, captured one, and the rest of them run back, got away. But they was coming up to the same point where we were coming.
Now, is that you said that
was the first day in action.
Okay. But where did you get close to the Third Reich as far as the leadership is concerned?
That was about as close.
That was it right there. Now, was the picture that I alluded to, where did that play in your service?
Which one?
The one, where you're coming up the hill and it's snow on the ground that the AP photographer got.
The war was almost over.
Okay.
And it was, we were 13 miles inside Germany. And we had a 50 caliber machine gun. I think there were six of us. A full squad is supposed to be 12 men, but we never did have a full squad.
Yeah.
But we were on this hill, and we were looking into a little village called Schunau. And we'd see the Germans come in and unload their trucks. But our orders was not to fire at anybody unless we were fired at.
Yeah.
There was an area, I'll say maybe it was a half a mile, that no American division was covered, and we were supposed to cover that area with that 50 caliber. So that's what we did. Man in charge would assign somebody to guard at night. And this picture, we went down at our company commander and the battalion commander were down at the bottom of this hill. It's a big hill we were on. So we went down to get ammo. We had half ammo and rations and the mail. We got our mail up there. And as we were coming back up, we were almost up to where the gun was. And this man hollered, "Hold it right there, don't move." And I thought he was a German. But he was from Associated Press International. He took that picture.
And that picture, I understand, is now in the National Archives.
Yeah.
Of you. Do you remember the fellow that was with you?
Joe Carl. He lived at Cleveland, Ohio.
Okay.
A few years ago, I sent him a copy of that picture. I never heard from him. Yeah. I don't know whether he's dead or... But he could speak German, he could speak Polish, he could speak Russian.
Oh, that was very handy.
Yeah, it was. But what? He was the sorest one to stand guard with.
You got to have one in the crowd, right?
He'd throw a blanket over his head, and we're standing there at night, dark night. I'd say, "Joe, the German's going to come up behind you and get you." Oh, he said, "I like that blanket." He had it over his head.
Do you remember how you felt? And where were you when you heard it was over?
We was in Germany. It's where that last picture was made.
First off, did you have any idea that it was close to over? Did you all have that information?
Every day I'd wonder if I was going to make it till the next day.
So you didn't know that we're almost to the end?
Right.
But
I didn't until we captured Dachau.
Okay.
It was, 12 miles from Munich.
And so you pretty much figured at that point, we may have this licked.
Oh, that was the most pitiful place.
You know, my generation, and a lot of people, even in your generation, that did not have the misfortune of having to go serve, if you want to say it that way.
Yeah.
I know to veterans it was a great honor to serve. And to all of us, it's an honor that they did. But a lot of people didn't see and experience, and there's no way that pictures could tell you how bad it was. We'll say it that way. But I've seen the pictures of the camps, and just looking at those, I'm sure that is just pales in comparison to how it was to see it in person.
Yeah. Dachau was the worst.
Were you prepared for what you were going to see?
No. The company commander knew. He sent orders out, and he told him he's the only one that knew about the camp. We didn't know nothing. And we was not the first ones in. We were supporting, my platoon was supporting the platoon that got there first. But it was so pitiful. Our K rations had a little, we called them dog biscuits. And we could give one of those prisoners that, and he'd bow down on his knees thanking you. There was 3,100 in there, and there wasn't a one of them weigh 100 pounds.
That had to make you that just turn your stomach.
And they had people where they burn them, what do you call them?
Crematory?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They had four of those ovens in there. And the year she went back with us, I went in there, and I could still smell the smell. My wife said, "You're just imagining that."
So I believe that can happen. You go back to this camp all those years later, and that memory is ingrained. Yeah. You'll never get that memory out of your head.
And there was a railroad siding right beside of that place, and there were six boxcars loaded with corpses, naked, most of them.
Sakes.
Throwed in there like cordwood.
You don't ever get that out of your mind.
No, it'll be with me forever.
You live with that.
Yeah.
But you had to feel good knowing that you were a part of the solution to the problem.
Through the town of Dachau.
Yeah.
And those people in Dachau didn't know that you could ask them. They didn't know that. No, that wasn't out there. We didn't ever know that was out there.
How could? Well.
And they lived, I'll say, within a quarter mile of it.
It was had to be an experience that...
See, he started that in 1932. That was his first one.
This is not the right way to ask this question. I started to say, would you do it again? You were drafted. I'd say the question is if you had the opportunity to serve your country again, would you do it?
I would say yes. I would do it.
But... not like that. No. I mean, I'm sure you don't want to ever see anything like that again. That had to be so hard for people to come back home.
Awful.
But I'll say one thing. When you came back home, I bet it put a whole new perspective on what you had here.
Yeah. Let me tell you a story about when I come home. I got into Lexington at midnight on Greyhound bus. And a policeman was running a man on foot right through the station, and everybody fell out on the street to see if he was going to catch him. And a man, I can't tell you his first name, it was Mr. Myers, stepped up behind me. Everybody in the bus station, he worked for the Lexington Water Company, and he pumped water, and he'd got off of work at 12 o'clock and come to the bus station to get a cup of coffee. But he knew my daddy. And I couldn't get a bus out to Nicholasville until 8:30 the next morning, and he said, "I'll take you to Nicholasville."
Wow.
And there was a sailor standing behind me, and he said, "Well, can I ride with you?" He said, "Yes." So we let him out at the courthouse, the sailor. And Mr. Myers said, "How are you going to get home?" I said, "I'm going to walk." He said, "No, you're not. I'm going to take you." So he took me right to the back door.
Did your family know you were coming?
No.
So that was a surprise.
Yeah, I got in. I knew how to get in the house.
Oh, you're kidding. It was during the night. They were all asleep, I guess. When did they find out you were there?
They were sleeping upstairs, and my mother heard me, and she said, "Who's down there?" And I said, "It's me. I'm home."
What a surprise. I bet you mom and dad, I'm sure they cried.
See, and they had lost Robert.
Right. And you made it home safe.
Yeah.
Now, you served all that time, and I think, is it documented? Are you now in Jessamyn County the oldest World War II veteran that we have?
I don't know for sure, but I'm sure there's more close.
So you came back home, and now you got to start your life again. So there's some things here that we want to make sure we talk about. First off, how'd you get with your wife?
Well, she remembered we met again the first Saturday night I was home, but things wasn't right. I can't explain it, but I went to Lexington and re-enlisted for 18 months.
Yeah,
because I couldn't make it. I was nervous, so I went down to Fort Campbell. They sent me. and they deactivated that. I think it was the 5th Infantry Division. They deactivated that, and they sent me to the MPs in Washington, D.C. Mm-hmm. And it was rough on me. I tell you, we had to go in Barsworth. They were in fights and stuff like that. I didn't like it. But the captain called me and he said, "Johns, we got a combat infantry badge. The Congress of the United States paid us $10 a month while we were over there." So he said, "Johns, you're drawing combat infantry pay and you can't do that in the MPs." I said, "Well, sir, send me back to the infantry." And he sent me as far away as he get to Fort Lewis, Washington, mm-hmm. the 2nd Infantry Division. So the company clerk was got to be a good friend of mine, and he was giving up company clerk, and I had a volunteer typing class down here in Kentucky where I was. They had, took night school, and I got to be a pretty good typist. Mm-hmm. So they made me the company clerk and upped me a grade to a corporal mm-hmm. from a PFC. That was Fort Lewis. I guess I got discharged from Fort Lewis. My time run out.
Yeah.
And I come home again, and things was different.
Things were different. Tell us your wife's name.
Susan Reinheimer.
She was from here, too.
Yeah.
And you all, at that point in time, I guess, things were better.
Yeah.
And that's when you got together.
I tell everybody I have loved her since she was 14 years old.
How long married?
Been over 50. 46 is the year we married.
Well, then this is your, oh my gosh, this will be your 70th?
I think 69th or 70th.
Wow.
We met, you remember Brother Stallings used to preach the Baptist?
I have heard of him, yes.
We met him on Main Street in Nicholasville and asked him if he would marry us. And he looked as she had joined the Nicholasville Baptist, and this is what he said to her. "Well, Miss Susan, I thought you was going to amount to something."
What about that? You married? She married you anyway, didn't she?
Yeah.
So you get married, and you decide it's time to start a family. So at this point in time, tell me your kids' names and what they've been doing.
Jenny's the oldest. Virginia.
Virginia.
You know her.
I know her well. Was married to Gary Simpson.
Yeah.
And Virginia's then, worked for our school system for quite a few years.
Then Robert, and he's been with Link Belt, and then her youngest is Georgia. And she had a problem with, what is that, an esophagus?
Mm-hmm.
And she's had a replacement, whatever they did, four times.
Wow.
So she worked for, but she did work for an insurance company. And
so
she lives in Louisville.
The three kids
and
a bunch of grandkids running around and that you're raising, too. Now, you've lived out in the Union Mill area for a long time, right?
Yeah.
Down the old Union Mill Road, down close to the old, what used to be the old Union Mill Bridge. But at some point in time that you decided, I guess I better get me a good job.
Yeah.
Is that when you went into the Postal Service?
No, before that, I went to school on the GI Bill, took an accounting course. And while I was taking that course, a good friend, Arthur Martin, was working at the A&P East Main, and he told me one day, said, "I can get you a job part-time at the A&P. I said, "Okay." So I went down there, and I got hired. And the manager, I can't remember his name, but he told me one day, he said, "If you'll get your GED," I was working part-time,
mm-hmm.
"you'll get your GED, I can put you on full-time." So that's what I did. I went over to university, took the test, and it was a tough one.
But you did it.
Got my GED and worked for him. And let's see, what did I do after that? Oh, I rented a farm.
Mm-hmm.
Ms. Tom Butler down on 27.
Mm-hmm.
Sue's brother, Roy, had been on there
Reinheimer.
13 years.
Yeah.
Let me correct you. It's not Hammer. It's
Heimer.
Heimer.
Heimer. That's right. So, and I remember him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He was a good man.
He lived up on Union Mill close to Locust Heights, didn't he? There on the left side of the road.
Yeah.
Sure did. Nice fellow.
So I farmed for Miss Butler 5 years. Then, where I was raised, down on the Shun Road, the farm across the road was owned by Edward Dodd of Dodd's Corner.
Yeah, they're across from Stratton
so,
Lumber.
So Mr. Charlie Bond had been there 40-something years, and I saw him sitting on the courthouse fence one Saturday night, and I told him I'd like to rent that. I heard he was going to leave. Mm-hmm. So we lived out here on 27 at the Butler place, and Edward Dodd come to see me. We sat on the front porch and talked, and he liked me and I liked him.
Yeah.
He said, I'll draw up a contract, and if you like it, it's yours. So I stayed with him till he died. 12 years, I think it was. And then left the Dodd place, and we bought this one where we are today.
Yeah, on the old Union Mill Road.
Yeah.
Is at that point when you went to work for the Postal Service?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or soon after that.
So you worked at the Postal Service, what did you say, 20 years you were there?
Yeah, about that.
Carrying mail, rural carrier.
Yeah.
Best I can remember.
Well, I was a dual for a while.
Oh, you did, for dual, yeah. You were probably with Roger Easley.
Roger had just left there.
Oh, he was before you.
Paul Watts was the officer in charge.
Okay, yeah.
And then we got John Hunt.
Yeah, John Hunt McMurtry.
Yeah.
Yeah, right, okay.
John Hunt, I took his route.
You work with some wild ones. I mean, you had Julian Jeanette and that bunch down there. That was the time and that was the day. And Kirby Teeter, I see his picture in here, and you and Julian Jeanette. You pretty much could have carried mail anywhere in this county because the mail carriers knew everybody around.
Was it 64? They declared they couldn't hire anybody. So they said the rural carriers could sub in the city. And I subbed in the city with Ty Foster and...
Oh, gosh, there's another name from the past. Yeah, Ty Foster. You've had a packed life.
Yeah, I have.
If you look back over your 90, almost 3 years, pretty wide span. You've traveled the world because Uncle Sam wanted you to. You were involved in one of the most awful but amazing battles of wars that ever took place in the World War II. Saw probably the most horrendous thing you'll ever see, and that's the concentration camps. But you had a pretty good life. Despite all of that.
State it this way, the good Lord has blessed me.
Yeah. Well, that leads me to a question, and this might be a hard one to answer for you, but when your time is done, when your good Lord decides I'm ready for you, what one word do you want people to remember Creed Johns by?
That he was a good man.
There you go. Long as you can do that, long as any of us can do
right.
that. Treat your people well and serve your country in whatever way they need you. You've had an interesting life,
that's for sure. I sure have.
And, sadly our time is at a close, but you've got so many stories that I'm sure that you could tell about your service alone.
I told my son Robert the other day, it was Father's Day, he brought me a present.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, I have been blessed with three good children.
Yeah.
Suppose that I had one that had robbed a bank or killed somebody.
Yeah.
And I have three good kids. So the Lord has blessed me that way.
And you came from an era, especially serving in as close as you did in Germany and Italy during that time. And that's like we said before. You don't realize till you go through something like that what you got back here.
Right.
Even though what you got back here may not be a castle, it may not be a Rolls Royce, but what you got after seeing that, I've often told people that our government has its problems.
It does.
Our country has its problems. It will always have its problems, always has. But aren't you glad he put us here?
Yes.
I don't know of anywhere else I'd rather be.
Yeah, right.
And thanks to you and your fellow servicemen, you contributed to keeping us safe.
After seeing those four foreign countries, I would do it again because nothing compares to the good old USA. I would do it again for them.
Well, on behalf of all of our listeners, I want to thank you for your service. And I know that it's a part of your life that I guess in a way you look back with some pleasure because, you know, not a lot of people to do that.
Right.
But on the other hand, it's something that you wish probably had never happened.
Right.
It's kind of a bittersweet type thing. But thank you for going through it and making it home. I'm glad you made it home.
I want to tell you this story. We stayed at one place in Germany that I'll always remember. And the little village, I can't remember the name of it, but they come out with an order. You couldn't keep any ammo within the village. You had to move it out. So me and two other guys moved out with the ammo. And we had a tent. And if a company come and wanted 100 rounds of 30 caliber or whatever, but there was a German lady that lived next to our tent, and she had a few chickens. And she'd save up her eggs until Friday, and she would make us each an omelet on Friday.
Yeah.
And she washed our underwear for a pack of cigarettes a week. And I'll never forget that woman. Her name was Frau Gangross. And her husband had hid out during the war to keep Hitler from getting him.
Wow.
And their little boy would hide in a haystack, take him food to eat. But the thing about it, she had a daughter, 19, that had a baby, and they couldn't get any bottle nipples, and she wanted us, we were three of us staying in that tent, she wanted us to ride home and get her some nipples. Now, my mother would have had a heart attack if I rode home and asked her for bottle nipples. But I always remember that good German. She was a good German.
Yeah.
She made us an omelet, and I'll always remember her.
We just don't know what's coming down the road for us today. Because I can imagine, as a boy going to Hanley School, the last thing that would ever entered your mind that you would be sitting in Germany.
No, not now.
Taking food from a German lady. And then seeing the concentration. I mean, folks, you just don't know what's coming down the road. You just don't know.
It's been a good life.
Yeah. Well, thanks for being with us. Wish you a whole lot more life.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah. My thanks to Creed Johns for coming in this morning and telling us all about his life and his experiences. Very interesting man. We could have talked a whole lot longer, I'm sure. We appreciate you coming in every Saturday morning, too, for All Things Jessamine. We'll do it again next week at 11 o'clock. It's all for you right here on Jess FM 105.9.
Beginnings are important, especially when it comes to building a future. From start to finish, Farmers Bank of Jessamine County will be with you every step of the way. Whether it's a house, a car, a college fund, or saving for retirement, it all starts here. Stop by any of our four convenient Jessamine County locations today or visit us on the web at myfarmersbank.net. Banking with friends and neighbors, Farmers Bank of Jessamine County, Equal Housing Lender, Member FDIC.